Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wisdom Wide Open Radio. Join your host, Susie Bonham Craig, and her special guest of our new Conscious Author series, Mick Quinn, as they embark on another journey to open the portal of wisdom. Susie invites you to participate in the chat room and to call in with your questions and comments on 718-305-6584. Simply press the number on your phone to enter the queue. And now, our journey begins.
Soulmates and journeyers, we're back and thriving, and I want to personally thank all of you, all of our listeners, for hanging in with me. I really missed our time away, and I know we're upon the autumn equinox, and we all know that how that brings change as well as a new season. And today I'm privileged to bring forth a very special guest as part of our new Conscious Author series, Mick Quinn. And just a brief sharing, as I love when things come together with the power of intention, I'm honored to be joining Deepak Chopra, Jack Canfield, Dr. Dennis Waitley, and several other conscious authors, especially my good friend Louise Crooks, in a new book, Stepping Stones to Success in Business, Life, and Relationships. And that'll be coming out hopefully late this fall. And I'll mention how you can reserve a copy if you'd like a little later on. But interestingly, while I was pondering on what I would contribute to the book, I found that finding joy and enjoying our journeys was appropriate because I experience it every day in my life, and I wish that others could do that as well. And then I received a note from Mick Quinn's lovely wife, Deborah, without knowing anything about what I'd been up to or even having heard of Mick before. She shared with me what Mick has journeyed through and wrote about in The Uncommon Path, The Awakening to Authentic Joy. So I couldn't have been more thrilled to start reading this book, and I'm really honored to have him today. And before we bring him on, I just want to let you know that Mick and his wife, Deborah, will be granting us a special gift to our listeners this evening. So please stay tuned till the end of the program, and we'll announce what that is. But I encourage you to stick around because it's a great gift. So, welcome, Mick.
Thank you, Susie, and it's my pleasure to be on, and thanks for creating this space for conscious authors. What a great title.
Yeah, there's so many new and upcoming authors that are really just delving further into this new conscious paradigm, and I love different perspectives and hearing, you know, what other people's journeys have been like and just having that, you know, share with our listeners about that. So I really, really enjoy that. But I just want to ask you to introduce yourself to our listeners. I know that you're an Irish author, so you're from the wonderful country of Ireland. And if I had a Gaelic translation for welcome that I could pronounce, I certainly would have used it. So thank you.
Well, I would say Gura Mahagath, which means thank you in Gaelic. So you would have said welcoming me in, but my Gaelic's fairly rusty. I can tell you, it's been quite a few years.
Okay, and you were actually the founder and CEO of several multi-million-dollar companies, of which you embarked on that endeavor when you arrived here in the United States back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually chose to give up that whole American dream style and go into the studies of Buddhism and Christianity and the evolution of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you could take us on a short little journey about that journey that you made here. And
sure. Well, the arrival in America was in pursuit of the American dream, which is very familiar to us who don't live here in the United States. And I was actually an illegal person for 7 years, believe it or not, living in the Boston area, until I got a green card. And as soon as I got a green card, I had just started studying meditation right around the same time, and I always wonder if there was a coincidence between those two, but who knows? And my meditation teacher at the time said, okay, now you have your papers. He said, get out of Boston, go back to college, and get into computers. And I was like, okay, that's good advice because I trusted this guy. So that's what I did. I went to Columbia, moved down to Manhattan, and very, very shortly after that, ended up getting involved with a startup that was a software development company and doing technical staffing, you know, staffing projects for the banks there on Wall Street. And that thing just grew in leaps and bounds in the mid-90s. We did really, really well. And I subsequently went on to start two more multimillion companies in the same vein, similar vein after that. So the American dream materialized, but underneath it all, there was something missing.
Mm.
So that's the short story of, the material success end of things. Now, curiously, at the same time, I was also studying, as you said earlier there, Tibetan yoga and Zen and Buddhism and Christianity. I had this parallel life, so to speak, and it wasn't until 1999 when I was trying to get out of being a serial CEO, and now what do I do with the quote-unquote rest of my life after this, because I certainly wasn't satisfied with that. My mentor at the time asked me, he said, what's the most important thing in your life? And two things came up. One was evolution, or spiritual evolution, or spiritual development, and the second thing was money and all that that involves. And I remember sitting with these two values going, which one is the most important one? I couldn't figure it out. And it took 2 years to actually struggle with that question to figure out which one was the most important to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Money and spiritual evolution.
Money and development. Money and evolution. And this is why I found a wonderful teacher called Andrew Cohen. He's based in Massachusetts. He teaches evolutionary enlightenment, and he's been teaching since the 80s. And I remember being with him on several long-term retreats and pondering this question, and it became more and more clear that the value of evolution was kind of edging out money. And then that left a quandary of how to support oneself if I was going to be most interested in spiritual evolution as a conscious value.
Yeah, I think many people who have embarked on spiritual quest or journey of sorts really struggle with that, the materialism versus realism. And so would you be able to share with us what insight you might have had that led you to the uncommon path?
Well, I think maybe I was lucky in a way, because in 2001 I had what was classically or is classically referred to as an awakening or a satori or a kensho or whatever you want to call it, a realization of self during a meditation. I was at a long-term retreat in the south of France. And I think it was 2 weeks later I returned to New York and 9/11 happened. And at the time I had had businesses based out of towers for 7 years. So here I am returning to, you know, quote unquote, what I thought was real life based on all these decision-making processes and all of this cultural conditioning. And the towers fall down with my business and my entire livelihood. So I don't know whether to call this luck or not, but this is what began the uncommon path and the realization that you really have to go through these levels of development, and earning money and being competent in that area of life is certainly one level of development. But once you say become competent in that, there's more. So 2001 through about 2003 was, again, of course, this horrible recovery from 9/11, but also struggling with this realization, because, you know, you were going to ask me why, and it's interesting when you ask somebody why in this realm, what usually comes back is that I really had no choice, because why often presumes choice. And in a deep spiritual realization, what one comes out with is that you're actually choiceless about taking this news of the potential of human consciousness to the rest of the world, because you begin to become aware of how much unnecessary suffering that there actually is. So Now we're up to 2004, and the vehicle I realized was to begin to, of course, to continue to practice, to deepen the experience, but also to write and to begin to move completely away from the quote-unquote business level of development into another way of sustaining myself.
Mm. Well, you mentioned the why, and I thank you for bringing that up, but I'm curious to why is the uncommon path and all of the wonderful strategies and journeys you take through this book, why are they so important for our audience to learn more about?
They're really so important, Susie, because of some of the concepts that I explain in the book, and of course these are discoveries I made along my own path, especially about the different sides of the egos and our motivations for being on a particular spiritual path, and also our intentions for developing ourselves. And I think one of the threads that runs through the uncommon path is this idea of moving from development for the sake of the self, meaning small s, to development for the sake of the self, big S. So what we're doing is we're moving slightly away from development for the sake of the individual, personal development, or small self-development, to development for the sake of humanity. Now that is, to me, the uncommon path, because if you look at a lot of traditional spiritual paths, and again, these are wonderful, wonderful practices and levels of development at their particular level, but beyond that, what the solution to the problems we're looking at in the world, and I'm talking very real problems, not only problems of how to evolve consciousness, but very practical issues that we need to deal with as a whole, are going to come with people who are most interested in development for the sake of the self, capital S. That's what the uncommon path is about. It's about rooting out this concealed conditioning, or the ways in which the ego has actually been manipulating our stasis, or manipulating much unnecessary suffering over the past, I don't know, 2,000, 3,000 years. It's been around for a long time.
So would it be safe to say that the book and what you offer within it is a healing process, or is it more of a discovery process?
I would say when one heals completely, new potentials arise that were actually existing in consciousness. They were already pre-existing structures in consciousness, and you were simply unaware of them because so much of our awareness and our attention and our consciousness is taken up with the support of suffering and this somewhat endless healing process that the ego likes to keep us on. Because, again, something I'm very clear about in the book is we're not trying to condemn the ego. It's actually a wonderful structure, and we'll get to that in a while, I'm sure. But the idea is that as long as the ego is firmly in charge, or unknowingly in charge of our spiritual path, it's going to keep us healing and healing and healing and healing for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. We never actually resolve anything. So we go on these beautiful, huge journeys called our spiritual path, but at the end of 20 or 30 or 50 years, we're sometimes none the better on. So the idea in the uncommon path is to begin to identify this and then completely heal, and even aspects of self like shadow, completely healing shadow. Because once that's done, there are these potentials that simply emerge, like they just pop right into consciousness, and you whoever you are, you can't even believe that, wow, what a wonderful idea that is. Or why not let's approach this issue from this perspective? Because simply what you're doing is you're releasing consciousness, you're releasing awareness that's been trapped by ego.
Now, do you agree? I love this. I love this topic, because what I'm finding through my own life, and I know many people, because in speaking in these circles, that we talk about in the moment that you become aware of that ego's hold and that unconscious belief, the minute that you become aware of it is really all that needs to take place. There's no more digging and in trying to relinquish the ego's hold, so to speak. So is it really about just being in the awareness of where these thoughts and feelings are originating from?
You're exactly right, and you know, I'll go back to one of my favorite writers out there is Eckhart Tolle, and The Power of Now, Stillness Speaks and those books he produced back in the late 90s speak exactly of this. And it's about identifying, because there's simply nothing else to do except when one identifies an aspect of unhealthy ego or an aspect of where one's attention was trapped, you are then presented with, and this is something I go into in depth in the book, with what's called an awakened choice. Now, awakened choice is a different way to respond, but you're responding to life, because life is your koan, right? Because everyone listening to this call has completely different life experiences. They're a very, very unique individual with very, very unique potentials for humanity and for themselves, for their own life as well. Very different life preferences, but each one of us, when we identify concealed conditioning, is presented with awakened choice, and awakened choice allows these potentials I was speaking of earlier to emerge.
Wow. Well, you know, on page 13 of the book, I started to read the book, and this page stood out for me because if you wouldn't mind me just repeating.
Sure. I have a copy right here so I can actually look at page 13.
Yes, it was actually in the little box about the evolutionary pointer.
Yes.
And you say, your path seems endlessly arduous when you are erroneously convinced that you have accessed one that leads to the end of superfluous suffering. I found this so intriguing because this allowed me to go a little deeper. And for our listeners out there, I really encourage you not only to receive this book, but to really go into this, because it's amazing. And if Mick, if you could elaborate on that, about the
sure.
many people who are certain that they're advancing towards their liberation, but what they come to find out.
Well, Susie, this is something that's based in my own experience, and also something that I've become somewhat painfully aware over the years of writing and taking this work to the public, is that the ego has a particular image of what enlightenment is, and at that level of development, it's absolutely perfect. But the problem is that we keep trying to pursue that, not knowing that we are making decisions with a structure given to us by the ego. So what I say, and if you look right before that evolutionary pointer, and just a note about the book and the structure of the book, these evolutionary pointers are on almost every other page at least, and these are like little takeaway lines that you can meditate on, that you can contemplate, that really bring out the depths of understanding that I'm trying to get across in the book, all for the sake of identifying and just bringing up these questions and saying, I wonder if this is why this situation never resolves, or I wonder why this is why I keep getting stuck here, or I wonder why I always have a confusion about this one point, whatever that happens to be, whether it's in a spiritual line of development, whether it's in a relationship line, whether it's in a career or diet or anything, right? So in the right before that, I say, what if the single greatest discovery you make on your quest for true happiness is the extent to which concealed conditioning has been directing that search away from contentment? Now, here's an interesting point. If we look at the role of the ego, now we're not talking about the Freudian ego, the I sense, not that aspect of self. The ego, the role of the ego is to protect our individuality. That's its role. And I talk about the emergence of individuality and the ego in the book and why it's so important. And one of its reasons is to defend our individuality, because I'm sure that Eckhart Tolle has home insurance, and I'm sure that Ken Wilber has auto insurance, because those are aspects of individuality that need to be defended. It's perfectly logical, perfectly normal. Now, the problem is, if we are using a structure whose role it is to defend individuality, to try and transcend or let go of or go beyond individuality, what happens? We just go around and around, because the ego is just doing its job. Its job is to maintain a struggle with the mind, a rich psychological state, a rich emotional state. That's one of its roles, one of its important roles. If we're using that structure, or maybe if that structure is using us to direct a particular path to get away from that, we just go around in circles. They might be big ones, they might be small ones, but they're circles nonetheless.
Okay, well, this brings up a question, and what you've just explained certainly, points to that. But there are many people on their spiritual journeys, and many are really focused on having the ego die. That's our mm-hmm. spiritual liberation. And I know you just explained that it's, you know, it's a crucial role that we have as being humans in this time-space reality that we're traveling through, and to identify with that individuality. So mm-hmm. a lot of us get tripped up on, you know, that when you're trying to take hold of the ego or release the ego's hold, that there's some kind of sacrificial thing that you're feeling as you're going through this. And it seems more like, you know, people will call it surrender. So what is it that we're really surrendering to?
What we're really surrendering to is the, let's say, the faith that over the past 5,000 years since the emergence of individuality and this structure called the ego, which is assigned to protect this individuality, we have come a long way as a human race. We have come a long way in 5,000 years. So we've made tremendous, tremendous progress, primarily because we have been 100% focused on this sense of self, this me sense, or this sense of individuality, okay, primarily. So in order to make progress from this point forward, in order to address the issues that have come out of that 5,000 span or that term of development, we need to address those issues from a different perspective. Now, that perspective is going to be in relationships with other people who have also identified individuality in themselves. Now, the idea is to have the ego working for us as opposed to having us working for the ego. It seems like a very, very simple little shift. It's profound, but what that does is that allows you and I to come together as one, not as two individuals. For temporarily, it means when we separate, we can return to, our identity with individuality. That's fine. But for a time, we can come together beyond ego. That's the next step in human evolution.
Mm. Oh, and I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for delving into that whole unity consciousness and, you know, and practicing that on a daily basis and engaging and feeling as one. And, you know, we have a... someone who visits our show often, and they have a quote that said, it's really what's the same in us that makes the difference. So I really love connecting into that.
Right.
Now, with regard to the book, you talk about concealed conditioning, and I've heard a lot of, you know, phrases being passed around out there about what concealed conditioning is. Could you explain a little bit for our listeners what it is that you point out about that in your book?
Okay, and it's good to say at this point, Susie, that this is another thread that runs throughout the book is this thread of concealed conditioning. If we take a large or let's say a high altitude view on this, we are all born into a particular culture. And we will develop up to the average level of consciousness in that culture by the time we're about 25 years old. At that point, and for some strange reason that those who know don't know, development stops. So we then go through a process of accumulation, often getting married, often pursuing a path or many different paths of development. And sometime in our 50s or 60s, again, for some unknown reason, this desire to evolve consciously wakes up again. Now, when you evolve up to an average level of consciousness in a culture, you have already accumulated. Now, this is the what they call the culturally created self. Okay, when we look and we call ourselves an individual, we're really a collection of culturally conditioned ideas and concepts. Now, to a very, very, very low level, and this is the same across every culture. What happens is, if we're not aware of this cultural imprint on how it affects our motives, on how it affects our intentions, on how it affects our values, on how it affects our ability to form and sustain relationships, on how it affects our ability to respond to humanity's issues, we are going to be kind of like a pinball machine where we run into something and we bounce off it. Now, we call this trajectory my life, but then we bounce off something else. So we'll spend, perhaps, I know this might sound a little bit strange, but an entire lifetime, or maybe several lifetimes, depending on what your beliefs are, going from one response to the next. All we're doing is reacting within the average level of consciousness of the culture into which we just simply happened to incarnate.
Oh, Mick,
so,
would you like to write my ghostwrite my autobiography? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, hey, you told me to go deep here, so.
Yes, and I'm sure our listeners appreciate that, because I can say that, you know, what I have gone through in the book, it's not your typical self-help book. It really isn't. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, visionaries and thought leaders out there that even we have interviewed and you know, have plenty of publications, and they do these preliminary steps. The preliminary steps, and then you can go into you know, Buddhism and studying ancient culture and wisdom and what's coming back from Eastern philosophy. But I love the way that you engage deeper within oneself. I mean, I really felt one in one with this book with you as I'm going through
Wonderful.
It. So I really
Wonderful.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I just like to take a little break just to allow our listeners. For you, those of you who are on the show page, you can go and click on Mick's picture, and that will take you to his website. There are also a couple of links at the bottom of the episode page where you can receive Mick's book, as well as learn more about him on his website and about his wife, Deborah, who's absolutely beautiful, and what a sweetheart she is, I must say.
Thank you.
I enjoyed engaging
with
her.
I'll pass it on.
Yes. Well, hopefully she's listening.
She is.
Good. And like I said, I'd like to I will announce it now because we only have about 30 minutes left in the show, that Mick and Deborah have graciously offered to our listeners, anyone who's interested in receiving an autographed copy of the book, The Uncommon Path, Awakening to Authentic Joy, if you email us at info@wisdomwideopen.com with your name, mailing address, and phone number, Mick and Deborah are going to be able to actually send you the book autographed for just $10. So I think it retails for $24-something. I'm not quite sure.
It's $24.95. So it's basically the shipping and handling, Susie. We'll send out the books for free. So the book is free, with the signature, of course. Maybe someday it'll be worth money. Who knows?
Yeah, right? Well, I love it. And I'm really attracted to the cover of the book.
Didn't they do a great job on that?
They sure did.
Can you believe this? The first cover they sent us, the publisher, the very first cover. And I remember opening it and turning away from the screen. And I said, Deb, you look at it and tell me. She goes, wow. And I looked and I was like, oh, it's perfect.
Well, you
first
know,
one.
You're not going to see it now, but I'm building a website right now, and you'll be amazed at what the header of my website looks like. It doesn't look like this, per se. Believe me, I understand intellectual property, but it's just amazing how these things flow and come together. And,
interesting.
You know, but I encourage the first 10 people who email us at info@wisdomwideopen.com, you'll receive, you know, with that, your information. We'll pass that on to Mick and Deborah, and they'll be happy to send you a book for just $10, and you can work that out with Mick and Deborah, how, you know, that gets paid for and whatever, but be sure to do it, because otherwise, you know, you can go to Amazon, you can wait, whatever you want to do, but this is a great deal, and it will be a personal gift from Mick. So thank you so much, Mick, for that.
You're most welcome.
Okay, let's go a little bit further, shall we?
Okay. So we were talking about identifying concealed conditioning, and then this is something else that really, really stood out for me when I began to apply or allow for the integration of the awakening into my life. I realized that a lot of these tools that I had been using for the prior, let's say, 10 years were perfect up to a particular level, but to go beyond that, they were simply insufficient. And the metaphor I use is, if you imagine life development as let's say a 15-story building. Okay, so you're born at the basement, you're born on the first floor. Now, as we said, you will grow up to the average level of consciousness of your culture, which let's just call it the fourth floor. Now, if you want to go beyond that, you can. There are definite paths up and up that building. Now, the people, the individuals in this world, and of course the past masters who were the most evolved people, they all are on the top floor continually constructing this building, right? So because consciousness is evolving, culture is evolving, they're building the top floor. So you're never actually going to get to the quote-unquote top. Okay, that's an idea the ego has, that nirvana is a place, and if I get there, I'm good. Okay, that is true, but maybe only on the eighth floor. Now, the idea is, when I started to look into how to express this awakening in the Uncommon Path, I discovered several sets of tools and teachings that are 14th floor and 15th floor level stuff. And some of this is Ken Wilber's integral theory from, he's an American philosopher, been writing since the 70s. Absolutely amazing stuff, which I've integrated in the first insight in the book as a tool for uncovering concealed conditioning. There are the teachings from Andrew Cohen, Evolutionary Enlightenment, that this is the ability to come together with other people in relationships that are beyond individuality for the sake of humanity. It's actually another way to experience consciousness. You know, one way to experience consciousness is when I sit down and meditate. I can literally experience consciousness. Awaken relationships is a second way to experience consciousness. This is how consciousness appears in the inner subjective context. Literally, between you and I, we can see and watch consciousness evolving, emerging and evolving. And then, of course, the process that Deborah works with and that we use in our integral coaching work is the Big Mind process, which combines Jungian shadow work with Zen. And that was developed by a Western Zen master here, Genpo Roshi, in Salt Lake City. So the good news is there are all these amazing tools out there. They just need to be brought into general awareness if for people who are really interested in embracing this work. They are there.
Wow. You know, Mick, I want to, if we could, hello?
Okay, I heard you say if we could.
Okay, if you could define, I'm sorry, authentic joy. What's that definition to you? What does that
to
mean
me.
To you?
Okay, authentic joy is a background or a foundation, or it's the fundamental support or place that resides behind, underneath, beyond, or as everything that you do. Now, we're used to joy. Joy comes and joy goes. Okay, so happiness comes and happiness goes.
Mm.
Authentic joy, and the way I think I mentioned this in the book, it seems to fall asleep after you do, and it seems to wake up before you do. So it's the fundamental ground. Now, earlier you asked about why. Another reason why is that authentic joy is a really great reason to work on this path, let's say in the quote-unquote spiritual marketplace, right? Now, that might be a nasty word to some people, but when one is connected or coming from or fully immersed in a foundation of authentic joy, you can face anything in life. Now, you can face life and death and loss and gain and profit and betrayal. You can also face the opposition that is can be, you know, somewhat a little bit intense from the ego, right? But you have this ground that is it cannot be defeated. It actually is consciousness interacting with the world and co-creating a new future for humanity. And that's your vehicle. That's your reason for getting out of bed. That's your reason for changing your job. It's the reason for changing your relationships. It's your reason for sitting down and practicing in the morning. It becomes life.
Well, isn't that the real core and fundamental reason why we do anything in life? Is to experience that ongoing joy that we feel when we get to that place, when we're helping someone or when we're so-called achieving something, you know, and our desires and what we're looking to co-create and build amongst humanity. I mean, isn't that the reason why we do it?
It certainly is, and let's say if you are aware that you are consciously involved, not in the process of life, because that's that implies a duality, but
mm-hmm.
as the process of life.
Right.
What if you know that everything you're doing is as the process of life in an infinite context? Okay. Now also, with the awareness of time. So I know I have 80 years, but at the same time I know this is an infinite process. When you begin to shift perspectives to that, now the ego can't deal with this, because the ego is in time, and that's perfectly correct, that's fine, and we have to admire that and honor that, etc., but we can't be attached to it. So when you begin to be able to take this apex view, which is time and timelessness, right, life as a process and life as a structure at the same time, simultaneously, this is the edge. Now you find somebody else who does the same thing, instantly in that relationship, all of these things pop out. Just
yeah.
ideas. It's just like, sometimes it's overwhelming, actually, sometimes. Overwhelming. Because
I know
you're literally dealing with, okay, you know, you're literally dealing with it, with consciousness itself, just popping.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because that really has been what I look forward to in my journey and continuing at this stage, you know, getting on the radio and, you know, meeting with all of you wonderful, you know, people who are evolving and teaching and just leading that way. I think it's wonderful, and how we can actually witness that process of our own evolution and the expression of what the universe wants to express through us. Exactly.
So then, you know, and here's the other interesting part, right? Then you, whoever you are, let's say you are the choosing faculty, okay? You actually realize that you are responsible for the future of not only yourself and your family and your friendships and your personal preferences, right? Because I prefer, you know, red wine and over white wine. So you have personal preferences, and those are fine. But you realize in this huge picture that you're actually responsible for the entirety of humanity. Now, that's a huge thing to take on, but that's where the juice is. Now, of course, again, the ego is going to like, oh, my God, I can't deal with that. And that's fine. That's what it's supposed to say. But once you identify the voice of the ego, you'll hear it saying that. You'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, so a dog is supposed to bark, and a chicken is supposed to lay eggs, and the ego is supposed to go, I don't want to take responsibility for the future of humanity, but that's fine.
Yeah, you know, and to know that too, when the questions are asked, when, you know, we're looking externally and saying, well, you know, these are all the reasons why we're here today like this and why things are the way they are, and taking responsibility for that too. But here's the springboard now. Here's the opportunity to now move in the direction of what this real purpose is in this, you know, of the universe expressing this process and evolution of humanity, and where you can take responsibility in being involved, like you say, you know.
Right, being consciously involved as the process, and again, the beautiful news is, and the tools exist, right? In you know, I was intrigued with the American coaching process for many years, because it's such an amazing process of moving people beyond therapy, like a post therapeutic response to one's own potential. And then integrating that in the Uncommon Path with Ken Wilber's Integral Theory, the simplicity of Genpo Roshi's Big Mind Process, and then the directness of Andrew Cohen's teachings of evolutionary enlightenment, and blending those together in a way that, as you said, yes, it can be a challenging read, and you want to go back and reread the book, but it's the tools are there. That's that's the good news.
Well, I think. Just as I had experienced in the book, you know, and just surrendering to the fact that I don't think I'm ever going to get it all, because it is a process, and the process is never ending, and it's constantly evolving. And to know how rest assured and relaxed you can feel in that while you're engaging in the challenges that you meet and trying to, you know, express and move forward and get involved and,
mm-hmm.
you know, actually contribute to that. To that process of evolution,
right? And isn't that beautiful? That
oh,
you
it
can
is.
Actually, yeah, Yeah.
It is, and that's how, you know, I have this saying I tell everyone, and it's find the joy in enjoying your journey. It's just that core joy that's there no matter what's going on, because that is your process of evolution, is to be there and be in it and be feeling it and being aware of it,
right,
and conscious of it.
Right.
And now it's
and
evolving.
And even sometimes you might not be able to even connect to that particular state. You know, I have a story in the book, and I ask the question about Krishnamurti, and I ask if when he was giving one of his wonderful, wonderful thoughts, how much of the audience attention was on his particular subjective state, on how he actually happened to feel when he was sitting up on stage, because I know he was renowned for giving talks when he didn't feel well. And
mm-hmm.
and he would just get on the stage and give these amazing Dharma talks. And how much of our attention was actually on his subjective state? Probably a little. We were more interested in what he was doing. So sometimes in this work, you may not actually feel very well. You may not feel very, you know, quote-unquote, enlightened or happy, right? But as you were saying, the engagement with the process is what produces this meaning and purpose and drive and motivation and reason for being and reason for becoming. That's that. And again, this is all foreign news to the ego, but this is the evolution that's happening on the 15th floor here of our building of culture. This is what's happening.
Yeah, and I often find it very exciting. Like, to me, I actually get physically, my body, you know, is elated, and I guess with men it's adrenaline, with women it's this oxytocin levels just raise, you know, inside of you, and you just want more, you want to experience more, and what you're experiencing is actually what's emerging from you internally, you know,
exactly.
Rather than, and I think that's just a wonderful process, and I know that your book is really gives some very insightful direction into that and step-by-step process. But one question I would like to ask you is, what if our listeners utilized the strategies that you're teaching us about in concealed conditioning and awakening to authentic joy? What would their lives be like in the next 30 days, 90 days, or maybe possibly a year from now?
Well, there's an old question that a lot of people have grappled with, and the question is, how long does it take me to awaken?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you ask a person who's been studying any of the Eastern traditions, they will probably say many lifetimes. It just takes many, many lifetimes of practice, wiping the mirror to get the reflection perfect. And again, at that level of development, that's a perfectly correct answer. Now, if you ask Buddha himself, he would have said, one lifetime sufficient. You can do it in this lifetime. He did. Why not? Now, with this process, and I always, you know, there's a disclaimer here. I'm going out on a plank by saying this, but it takes 1 year per 10 of lifetime to significantly awaken to concealed conditioning.
Mm.
With this,
would you repeat that again for our listeners?
Okay, it takes 1 year per 10 of life experience or lifetime to awaken significantly to concealed conditioning with this work. Now, I'm talking active engagement, where you have a practice of meditation, where you are working on intersubjectivity and bringing up relationships, identifying concealed conditioning, especially in that area of life. Where you are conscious of energy, sleep patterns, diet, exercise, and also where you are beginning to evolve towards what's called a conscious career. When you're running, now I just described Ken Wilber's integral theory very simply here. When you're working consciously, and we do this in our integral coaching work, myself and Deborah, with people who are interested in really, really making progress, is to fully engage with this. That's how long it takes. That's how long, and this is based on evidence of people we have been working with over the last couple of years. And again, Susie, this is just consciousness speeding up. Why not?
Mm.
This pace
okay.
of development.
Okay. Yes, why not? That's the biggest question, right?
Why
it's
not?
It's always about why not. Why not? you know, one thing I'd like to, if we could just delve into a little bit, is
sure.
about getting beyond limitations in the relationships that you know, and be free from personal conflict, because we all experience this in our personal relationships. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, from visiting your site and some things in the book about you and Deborah and how you live a conflict-free relationship. So could you offer our listeners a couple of pointers?
I sure can. I think this is one of the most beautiful gifts of development at this level, is the reward of what we call in the book awakened relationships. Now, an awakened relationship, I'll give you the classic definition, is a relationship with it can be with one person or with many people, that is completely free from all unnecessary emotional and psychological suffering, which means the bickering and the arguments and the psychological stress and emotional stress are so absent that they're actually taken for granted. The absence of conflict is actually taken for granted. I remember about 2 weeks ago, Deb and I were having a glass of wine here on the balcony watching the sunset, and she said something that reminded me of something years ago, if someone had said in a relationship, would have caused a problem. And I remember I said to her, did you notice you just said that? And she said yes, and she said, let's try and have an argument. And I swear, Susie, we tried, and it was hilarious, because the energy, the root, it was like trying to dig in concrete. There was not, you couldn't get through it. There was nothing there. And this was, it was quite amazing. So if you think about it in the big picture, let's say you and I and other people want to come together to resolve an issue that's affecting humanity. We have to be able to come together in these types of relationships, because what it means is we have done significant amount of work on the personal level with shadow, with meditation, with uncovering concealed conditioning. Because what's our motive now? Our motive is not exactly how we happen to feel in the moment. Our motive is much bigger than that. It's about you. It's about other. Okay? Mm-hmm. I care about myself in you. I care about myself as humanity. This is where our center of attention is. Now, the ego doesn't like this, because there's a very common saying that conflict in relationships is healthy. Conflict in relationships causes growth to happen. And again, this is perfectly correct, but only at that level of development. Now, if you're at that level of development and it's not working out for you, then maybe that's the voice you're listening to, is the voice of the unhealthy ego telling you this over and over again. Because again, its role is to sustain conflict. Eckhart Tolle talked about this. Many, many people talk about this. We have to identify it, move beyond that level. And the reward is awakened relationships. Now, I will say that there are certain situations where conflict will arise, but always, always the conflict in an awakened relationship has to do with the product or the emergence of the relationship. And that product or emergence always has to do with the evolution of consciousness or the evolution of culture. So if you and I have a disagreement over the path of a project that has to do with helping other people evolve, that's a really healthy discussion that we're going to have. It has nothing to do with the personal level.
Right. It's focused on other and what we can do to move that and
exactly.
Improve that.
Exactly.
Okay, now, what about when we talk about these personal relationships, especially one-on-one relationships? And I know the dynamics that you're talking about. In fact, my partner and I, Craig, very rarely, if at all, get into, you know, disagreements. We're very mm-hmm. much into the mutuality, into respecting each other's individuality. And when we do talk, we are talking about what, you know, can benefit others. And I know it's his life path as well as it is mine. So in that conscious development, I think people reach that point where they are arguing all the time, and you're saying it's not going beyond. There's nothing that's coming out for mm-hmm. them, and they're left with this choice, you know, in the moment to either walk away or to engage on another level. And of course, what we hear from the spiritual community is just impute your positive energy, impute the higher vibration that you're connected to, and because that person won't be able to operate on, you know, in their own vibration. So what do we do? What do we do when we have a relationship conflict and we're at that stage? Because is it just a key for us to look further into ourselves and say we need to fix this within ourselves? Or Like, what happens?
Okay, and again, this is chapter 2 in the book called The Whole I, and this deals with the Freudian sense, the Freudian I sense, which sometimes is called the Freudian ego, and an aspect of Freudian ego that's very, very important to recognize and understand, and that's called shadow. So I would recommend to anybody listening to this call, if there is any hint of conflict in a personal relationship, that you really do cherish that relationship and you really, really want to heal and move beyond this conflict, even no matter how tragic it seems at this moment, right? Read this chapter on shadow, and I have this wonderful story in there about Chris and Hazel. I don't know if you got to that story. It's actually a true story about the husband began to do conscious evolution and actually engaging with this work and the coaching process, and he discovered this process of identifying and healing shadow. Now, his wife thought it was just, you know, he was just being a nice guy, but he was able to keep it up because he was really, really able to understand and bless and owned his own responses and also be able to interact with a pretty rich, emotionally rich relationship. Now, again, the ego will convince us that when we awaken, we become these kind of unfeeling, emotionless beings. It's actually the opposite. It's actually the complete opposite, right? And awakening in no way denies our humanity. So in chapter 2, I speak about this. What is the ego, the Freudian ego? What is shadow? How do we reintegrate that? And how do we deal with this turbulent, emotional states that we sometimes find in these relationships? As I said, life is your koan. Okay, so whoever is in front of you, in your kitchen right now, in your living room, at your workplace, those people are pointing the way out of suffering for you if you have the tools to deal with this. And again, these tools are around. Debbie Ford has a new video out on this, which is interesting. So they're beginning to enter general consciousness, but the tools are there. So if you're interested, you can transcend and include that level of development in your relationship. In most cases.
Yes, and I want to thank you for bringing that up. For our listeners also, there is a short video on our website, on the show page, actually, of Debbie Ford's The Shadow Effect. So Mick and I do encourage you to take a look at that as well, because that's the beginning of the journey.
It's the beginning. She quotes Ken Wilber in there at the beginning of that. And this is again, this is another teaching that's part of the uncommon path, because sometimes it's frowned upon as unspiritual to be developing your ego. But
yeah,
it takes a really, it does. I mean, I'm talking about the Freudian sense. And again, Susie, you know, just so the readers know, these distinctions are in the book as simply as I could put them, because these are concepts we need to be clear about, so we can figure out, you know, who's talking in the head and what's the most appropriate response to it.
Yes, and I agree. And listeners, again, I just want to let you know, if you do want a copy, to receive a copy of Mick's book, please email us at info@wisdomwideopen.com with your name, address, and phone number, and I'll be happy to forward that off to Mick. And our first 10 emails that we get, actually, and I'm not in email right now, so I can't check, but I'm sure there's quite a few in there already. And you'll receive a personally autographed book and message from Mick for just paying shipping and handling, which is $10. So I appreciate all of you really just taking advantage of that offer. It's a gift. And you're not going to be able to put the book down. And you might even go backwards, like I've been doing. I keep going forward, and I go backwards, and it's just great. And you know, I have several books that I keep. This one's definitely a keeper. Definitely a keeper. I give a lot of them away, and I just love it. It's so wonderfully, inspiringly, and very easy to read. It's an easy read, and it's very easy to understand. So I really do appreciate for how you've interacted with, you know, the people that you really want to touch and you know, reach out and make a difference for, Mick. So, let's talk about what's next for Mick and Deborah. What are you doing now in your workshops, and, you know, how can that benefit the people that are listening today?
Well, you know, Deb, Deb is actually off to Spain next week for a 7-day retreat to teach one of my favorite chapters in the book is called Reclaim Your Consciousness, which is about identifying the concealed conditioning in your decision making process, and it looks at how an awakened person or a person who's awakened to ego makes decisions. They make decisions in a completely different way, and she's combining that chapter with Genpo Roshi's Big Mind Process. So that's one thing that's coming up. And of course, Susie, as I mentioned, we do have this integral coaching process that we work mostly by phone once a week or twice a month with individuals who are interested in going deeper and deeper into this. You don't necessarily have to have read the book, but it's helpful. And also, we are now getting involved with a nonprofit hospital in Antigua, Guatemala, that for helping. It's the only hospital for malnourished children, so this is another effort that we're taking on to really help people who are way, you know, quote unquote, at the bottom of the triangle, who really need help in just purely from a survivalistic level. So this is something else that we're integrating into our work. So if there's anyone out there who's listening that can contribute to something like that, we're more than happy to hear from you.
Oh, that's wonderful! What an endeavor to embark upon, Mick. Antigua, Guatemala. Wow. Now you'll be visiting down there. Is this like a venture that you're going to be away for, or will you still?
Well, we actually visited there this summer because part of promoting this book, we moved from Europe and we kind of missed the Spanish culture a little bit and went to Guatemala on the recommendation of a friend. But all of a sudden, we just started stumbling across all these people who were helping the children down there. They were just popping out of the woodwork, and it just seemed that there was a calling there for us. It was a strange event, and it's you know, Antigua is such a beautiful blend of first world, and then four blocks away you have third world, and these people are just so lovely. But they have, you know, they're resource poor. So what I'm trying to do is to connect people who are resource rich, meaning resource in intelligence, in wisdom, in life experience, and also, of course, in the materialistic sense, with these people who are resource poor and ignorant, to kind of bring them closer together.
Well, that's so wonderful to hear. And, you know, people like you and Deborah and many people out there that are really looking at expanding and moving forward in that stage of development where we're really, you know, making the contributions wherever we can from our hearts and our souls and finding that purpose within and having it, you know, work its way out. And I'm taken back. I really am taken back by a lot of the things that I've been exposed to lately and mm-hmm. and how it's really, you know, it's a calling for me as well, too, because I feel right. The more people that I'm connecting to, I'm finding all these openings into really how to pick up the momentum and, you know, bring whatever resources we can to help the whole of humanity. So I really appreciate what the both of you are doing. One more thing about the coaching program. You mentioned that it was once or twice a month on the phone. Are these group coaching or is it individual coaching?
No, this is all individual coaching. We haven't gotten to a level yet where we're actually doing the coaching in group. I mean, the classes are you know, your typical workshops, but because the coaching is so much more in depth, because everyone comes with at different levels of development and different life experiences, they are still on a one-to-one basis.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much for that. And everyone, please check out Mick at mickquinn.com as well as theuncommonpath.com. And we'll be looking forward to your email and receiving Mick's personalized autographed book for $10. Thank you so much, Mick, for joining us. And I hope you'll come back again soon. I definitely
want
to keep
Susan.
In touch with you and Deborah.
Absolutely. And we're definitely in touch.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Good night from here. Bye.
All right. Take care and best to you.
Bye. Bye.
Okay, listeners, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We're glad to be back with our new Conscious Author Series, and we hope you enjoyed our episode with Mick Quinn. Again, please catch the archives if you missed the beginning of the show. We'll be looking forward to your email. This is a wonderful book, and I want to thank you all for joining us again. And be sure to tune in next week when we interview Sandy Levine, who's a TV producer who managed to emerge from an incredible personal family crisis. And it's going to be really interesting to journey with her. And in the meantime, please find the joy in enjoying your journey. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week, everyone. Bye-bye now.